If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Play ball! It's 30 with Murdy with your host, Sweeney Murdy.
Welcome back, everyone. As we head to October, the best month in baseball, we will no doubt celebrate some of the great moments of baseball's past, as well as add new chapters to the sport's legacy. It's what's so great about the game, isn't it? Connecting the stars and the champions throughout the years. This week's guest on 30 with Murdy has seen a lot and experienced a lot in this game. In fact, earlier this month marked the 60th anniversary of his Major League debut, and that is the one and only Tim McCarver. McCarver's playing career began in 1959 when he was just 17 years old. He played on two St. Louis Cardinals World Championship teams in 1964 and 67. He was the runner-up for the National League MVP in 67, made two National League All-Star teams, and along the way he caught Hall of Famers Bob Gibson and Steve Carlton, among many others. McCarver moved to the broadcast booth in 1980, where he quickly gained the reputation as one of the best analysts in the game, and he called his first World Series in 1985, the first of 24 World Series he called for national TV before stepping back in 2013. He still calls a couple dozen games for Cardinals television in St. Louis. Tim is a Hall of Fame broadcaster, winner of the Ford Frick Award in 2012, and next week Tim will be honored at Fordham University with the Vin Scully Award for Excellence in Sports Broadcasting. Recently, I had a chance to catch up with McCarver to talk about his career as a broadcaster, as well as some highlights from his playing days. Tim spun tales from his first game in the majors, only a few months removed from high school in Memphis. We also talk about some of Tim's highlights from World Series and All-Star games and get his thoughts on some of the changes in the game and the product on the field in 2019. But we begin our conversation talking about his latest award, the Vin Scully Award, presented by Fordham University's radio station WFUV. Here is my conversation with the great Tim McCarver. Tim, you've won a lot of awards and a lot of honors, and I got to think, you know, the Ford Frick Award, the Hall of Fame is got to be the biggest one, but when there's an award named after Vin Scully, his name is attached to it, and you win that, I got to think that's pretty big.
It is a major award in my mind. And you know what? I got my first phone call from Vinny. I'd never talked to Vinny on the phone. And when he called about 6 months ago, I was breathless. I mean, come on. Who's not going to be affected by getting a phone call from Vin Scully? And I was no exception. It was fabulous. We talked for about 20 minutes about even things that don't include baseball or announcing or things like that. We covered that, too. But it was wonderful. It really was. It's pretty special when you're talking to Vinny for 20, 30 minutes.
Tim, I'm curious, when you first got into broadcasting, I want to know two things. What did you think was the easiest part about it, and what did you think was the hardest part about it?
I thought the timing of the words that you expressed, not necessarily to be verbose, not necessarily to be on and on and on, but what was the word to use at a particular time? And that timing is very, very valuable, particularly to a to a man who is trying to describe the play. It's very, very important to be brief and impactful. All of those things are vital. And they, at times, can be the toughest things to do also. It's almost as though when you're a when you're one that's played the game, that knows the game, supposed to know the game, supposed to be, that you're afraid to react. You're afraid to, and I was never afraid to react. If there was one thing that I was either given or honed over the years, it was react. Don't worry about it. React. Sometimes the reaction has gotten me in trouble, but I reacted. I did, and I was happy I did, even though it might have been it might have been the wrong thing to say or the wrong thing, what have you. But it was honest. Reactions are honest. Oh my gosh, look at that! And you're pleading with your viewer to look at that. Or you're setting up a play that might be, it may or may not happen, but you're making a good case for it to happen, and then consequently you're allowing the audience to react along with you. That to me are some beautiful moments in the game, and I've had a few, too few to mention. But I've had a few.
You know, it's funny. I don't know if you're how closely you followed, if you're a football fan, but Tony Romo was getting praised last year for his ability to just watch the formation and call the play that was happening and giving his audience a glimpse into what the quarterback was doing, what he was seeing, and exactly what was going to happen next. That's a lot harder in baseball, but I got a feeling that, you know, from watching you and listening to you over the years, that's the kind of thing you were trying to get your viewer to see.
Yeah, to allow you, number one, to react, and then to allow them to put them in a situation that's that way. I'm not sure it's harder in football than baseball. I don't know because I'm not a football analyst. I certainly admire Tony. I admire all the great analysts, John, from John Madden and others. But I'm not sure. That's kind of an interesting thing to think about, whether football is tougher to set up than baseball. I'm not sure about that, but it's an interesting point.
Timmy, did anybody from another sport? You mentioned Madden. I don't know how much you'd talked to him over the years, but did anybody from another sport ever have an impact on how you broadcasted games and give you advice that mattered to you that wasn't just about baseball, it was about broadcasting a game?
One of the great things John told me, we were both with CBS in the early 90s. I worked with Jack Buck in 1990 and 91, and then with Sean McDonough in 92 and 93. And when we had our little sessions during the off season, the one thing John told me that I've never forgotten, he said, "Don't let the game come to you. Don't let what you're thinking overwhelm the game coming to you." And that's a very important point when you think about that, because you're allowing the game to dictate what you say and not what you're saying to dictate, to try to wedge it in, if you know what I mean. You know what I'm talking about, mm-hmm. Sweeney.
Yeah.
It's and that's when the game starts flowing. That's when there's that wonderful rhythm that goes on between you and your partner that is just a thing to behold from someone in the profession.
Tim, I love the timing of this award, too, because this is, it's been, we just passed the 60th anniversary of your debut, your big league debut, what started your baseball career, four decades in the game, and then all the years broadcasting. But I was fascinated when I just looked up the box score of your debut. September 10th, 1959, it's the Cardinals at Milwaukee. There are only 1,600 people in the stands. You were 17 years old. I can't even imagine. You were still 17.
I can't either, Sweeney. I cannot either. Earlier in that game, I had something about which I was very embarrassed in front of my teammates. It was my first major league game in uniform, and I gave out in the bottom of the fourth with Henry Aaron hitting. Come on, Hank. that is a true story. And Alec Grammas, you may remember the name,
yeah,
shortstop, came up to me and he said, son, he was old enough to call me son, and I was young enough to accept it. He said, son, up here, we root for our guys. And I mean, everybody on the bench exploded, and I was purple with embarrassment. And I later on in that game, so that's, unfortunately, my first at bat was necessitated later in the game by that faux pas. And boy, that's you don't root for the other team. I found that out.
It was a pinch hitting appearance. Do you remember like what you were feeling walking up to the plate for that first one?
I remember Del Crandall said, welcome. That's all he said. and then a fly ball to who else? Henry Aaron in right field.
Wow. You know,
and the next day I started against Glenn Hobby at Wrigley Field.
The thing that stuck out to me about that box score is I noticed that one of the names on the Brewers side of that box score is Ray Boone. And the last game you played in your career, you know, you were teammates with Bob Boone. And then, of course, one of your famous broadcasting games is Game 7, 2003 ALCS, when Aaron Boone hits the game-winning home run against the Red Sox, and his brother Brett is in the booth next to you. I mean, you know, Boone's all over your career.
Michael Wiseman was our producer for that game, and he said, Tim, now take your time, but move out of the shot. Because they were obviously trying to get Brett Boone after his brother had just won the American League pennant for the New York Yankees. And he was not having a good series.
Yeah.
Before that home run. And there was a brilliant piece of producing by Michael, I might add, who is a great, great producer. But just to Aaron Boone, split screen, Aaron Boone, Brett Boone. Brett Boone, the announcer, Aaron Boone, the hitter, and the Yankees have won yet another pennant. It was brilliant and stands out in my mind as one great moment.
I love the way the generations cross the way they do right there with your career. And it happened again recently. I mean, as you and I are talking last night, Mike Yastrzemski is playing left field at Fenway Park and hits a home run at Fenway Park, and his grandfather, Carl, is in the stands. I mean, you don't get moments like that in almost any other walk of life.
Well, but the game is such that even though, and I know the game's been criticized today for very sound reasons, but if you just give the game a chance, it will present the moments that you're looking for. Just allow it to happen. And that's the one thing that I found out in broadcasting, that don't, please, in telling yourself, don't force this. Allow it to happen. And when you allow it to happen, it feels so good when it does happen.
There's something else that stuck out to me when I was just perusing your page again. You were a perfect 3 for 3. You were a 1,000 hitter in the All-Star game, huh?
Yeah, Catfish kept pitching me away in Anaheim in 1967, and I liked the ball away, and Catfish didn't know that. I got a couple of hits there, and then my first hit was against Pete Rickard, and the hometown of St. Louis.
Yeah.
I was driven in by Mari Wills. I'm very, very proud of that moment.
You scored the winning run in St. Louis in the 66 All-Star game. And the next year you go 2-for-2 in extra innings, a couple of 2-to-1 games. I mean, there aren't there aren't too many people who can say they batted 1,000 in an All-Star game. That's when the pitchers are supposed to dominate.
I think the few at bats I had was one of the big reasons. Who's kidding who? I've talked about all the great broadcasters that I've been associated with. I took Howard Cosell's place in 1985. Al Michaels taught me more about television than anybody I work with. I had a chance to work with Keith Jackson in 1986, the Mets playoff series that was scintillating with Jack Buck. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Yeah.
In 1991, and then with Joe Buck 20 years later, who said, after David Freese hit a home run in the 11th inning, he said, "We'll see you tomorrow night." Now, you know, when you're to the right of both father and son, mm-hmm. it means you're old. But you're old for a reason, and I love those reasons.
And you're good enough to have been there for that long. That's the other thing. You know, there's something that I've talked about a lot recently when we talk about the way the game has changed and the way pitching has changed. And you were there for it, and I still can't wrap my head around, you know, what was happening in the moment. I would love for you to describe it to people. Game 7, 64 World Series. Bob Gibson's got a lead in the ninth inning. He's trying to pitch a complete game. He gave up 2 home runs in the ninth inning and was still allowed to finish the game. He did finish it, but what was happening with you guys on the mound and in the, you know, he mentioned how he looked in the dugout and said, "Are you sure I'm going to finish this?" But what do you remember about that ninth inning?
Bob may have. I didn't. Mm-hmm. I learned by then in catching Bob Gibson, don't look in the dugout for him. Yeah. And I'm serious. But Johnny Keene came to the mound with Bobby Richardson, the batter. And Johnny, when asked about it later, we were up 7-5, 2 out, nobody on. But following Bobby Richardson was Roger Maris. So you don't want Roger Maris sitting after hitting 60 home runs 3 years earlier in a ballpark. That's 310 feet down the right field line.
Mm-hmm.
So Johnny Keene, when asked why he left Gibson in the game, he said, "I owed it to his heart." And did he ever.
Wow.
And he came in and jammed Bobby Richardson. Dow Maxwell made the play, and we won the World Series against the vaunted Yankees.
So how is your friend Mr. Gibson doing these days?
He's doing okay. I know exactly what you're saying. I've talked to him several times. And he's doing okay. That's about as far as I can take it, Sweeney. I know you understand.
Fair enough. So, Tim, in your role now that's been cut back, you're still doing some Cardinals games on TV, but not nearly as many games as you were doing years back. But the thing I hear from a lot of people, even people that played in this game 5 and 10 years ago, is that they don't like the way the game has changed in such a short period of time. Now, you've seen a lot of changes over the course of your career in the game. I'm just curious, very simply, do you like the game today?
Yeah, I like the game, yes. Do I like it more than I liked it before? I don't think so. I think you have to adapt to the changes that are being made. Are there certain things that players of my generation don't like across the board? I think so. Like two-strike hitting. I mean, strikeouts aren't as the players don't seem as vulnerable to a strikeout as they used to seem. Maybe I didn't explain that properly, but strikeouts don't seem to be as important as they used to seem.
Mm-hmm.
Guys are swinging for the fences now with two strikes instead of adapting, going the other way. Choking up on the bat is almost a misnomer now.
Yeah.
With certain players. And base running has suffered. I mean, you know, it used to be that players prided themselves on going from first to third with one out, or even none out. Now it doesn't seem, you know, moving runners along, moving a runner from second with nobody out to third. So on the one hand, I say the game is still the same. I don't mean to say that, because it's certainly not that way, and the hitters have changed. I think as a result, if you've got really good stuff, I think it's easier to pitch to hitters today, as kind of an aside. On the other hand, I think the ball's harder than it used to be.
Yeah.
I think the bats are harder than they used to be. I think in that respect, I don't know what's going to happen during the off season, but I think attention should be toward those two things, because they, you know, the Players Association and Major League Baseball have to get together. And if the ball's harder, well, soften it. You know, if the bats are harder, soften them. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how to do that, but it should be done.
You know, so much of what the game is right now is based on a new level of statistics, and I always liked how you appreciated the numbers in the game, but I'm curious, as a player, as a catcher, would you have liked to have had the depth of information that is provided now?
I think I would have, I don't know if I would have thrived with that extra information, but it would have helped. I think I've softened my stance on the metric system. I think the people that are in charge of those things, I think they're doing a very good job. They're doing the very best job they can possibly do. But on the other hand, I think, you know, baseball is a game of feel. And I remember Dallas Green used to say, statistics have no heart.
Yeah.
And I love that comment, because he was right. I mean, hard statistics do not have a, you know, they don't have a heart, and players do. And there are guys, obviously, with bigger hearts than others. On the other hand, you know, it's an amalgam of everything that you have to study to get to whether the game has changed irreparably. I don't think that that's the case. I think that baseball can get themselves out of this by common sense. But the game, you know, the viewing habits have changed among fans now. You have 12 and 13 year old children looking at their iPhone during the game. They come to a baseball game, and even though they're present, their mind's elsewhere. It's a changing society that we're dealing with, and baseball's always been very well done, very well, and trying to keep up with society. And I think they have people in charge who will continue to change with society. So without trying to beat the horse, those are my responses, and in some way they're not tethered to common sense.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure, and I'm glad I don't have to make those decisions either, Murdy.
Tim, there's, you know, the new wave of statistics is incorporated into broadcasts a lot more now, and
sure,
there's a guy who does the games up here, David Cohn, who was of a different generation, played in a different generation, but is very much into the analytic data and the statistical revolution and what it means and how to understand it and how to convey it to the fans. I'm curious how much of it you like to use or like to refer to during your broadcasts.
I think if it's appropriate, explain the appropriateness of it. I think David Cohn would be the type of guy. He's a very intelligent guy, and I admire David in every way, as far as a baseball player, as far as a person, and all of that. But I think it's to each his own. It's I don't think this new set of statistics should get in the way of explaining the game. I tell you the truth, Sweeney, I don't do enough of those games.
Mm-hmm.
I did do about 27, 28 games a year, and that's about a sixth of the schedule. So I don't do as many games as I would like from a metric standpoint to explain what is appropriate, nor to give a presentation to the listener how this applies,
yeah,
and how appropriate, because it may get in the way of a guy going from first to third. So I'm probably guilty of thinking that the game was better when I played. I think that's an appropriate thing for most players. But I also try to be fair in the way I look at these particular items. It's appropriate also that, you know, that your partner blends in to that particular thing as far as metrics are concerned, and not have him one-sided, you know.
Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Absolutely. You know, there's another part of this.
I mean, trying to be fair about this whole thing, sometimes it's tough to explain fairness.
You know, there's another part of this, Tim, that I think is relatable to you during your playing days, and I want to know your take on it. You caught over 1,200 innings twice in your career, and that's a really tough number for guys to reach nowadays because the rest is built in, and that there is value placed in that rest as opposed to value in playing every single day. Do you wish that there was value placed in resting a player and getting more production out of him back in your day when you're catching 110 degrees in St. Louis on the turf?
That's an interesting question. I would have to say that it revived my hitting skills, and it gave my legs a chance to rest over through the middle of my career. So it does have credence. It does make sense that perhaps guys should get away, particularly if your position is that of a catcher.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you think about catching. Catching's a grueling.
Yeah.
How Yadier Molina does it in St. Louis, I mean, I just don't know. I mean, today he's catching after a night game last night, and it's burning hot, bristling hot in St. Louis. And here he is again behind the plate. I mean, how this guy does it, it's just remarkable in where he catches and how he shows up every day to catch, which is not inconsiderable now.
I mean, yeah.
You just gotta think about what he's done with his career. But it's an interesting thought. Yes, I agree.
Tim, the last thing I want to ask you is this. The Hall of Fame opened up a big class this past summer. And a couple of guys got in on the Veterans Committee with Lee Smith and Harold Baines. And you know, I don't think anybody is of the illusion that they are in the exact same category as, say, Joe DiMaggio and Sandy Koufax. But I think it's clear that there's room for a lot of players, a lot more players than currently are in the Hall of Fame, to get in. So as the Veterans Committee convenes every year trying to add a few more names, I'm curious to how many people that are there certain people that you would like to see get into that class?
I don't know that I'm qualified to have an opinion on that. I guess I'm qualified to have an opinion,
yeah.
But I'm not sure it's the type of opinion that is appropriate to comment on, because I'm not on any committees, nor do I, you know, I'm not a writer. I'm a broadcaster. So, I don't know. Lefty used to have a great line. He'd say, I feel strongly both ways. and in a sense, I guess that's one of those lefty replies. Steve Carlton, of course, was a lefty. And I feel strongly both ways. I don't know what I feel strongly about, but I feel strongly both ways.
Yeah, you're one of the only people I think that's ever heard Steve Carlton actually speak. That's a pretty small group of people right there.
Let me tell you something, Marty. When you drive across country from St. Louis, Missouri to British Columbia, and you can withstand each other after a two-year deal, you're either friends or something's up. But I mean, we did that. We used to do that in the early 70s, and I don't think anybody is qualified to know Lefty like I knew Lefty. But as far as his pitching was concerned, the only thing I did differently is I called his slider more. That's it.
That's a pretty good call. I think it worked for both of you. One last thing: when you watch a game and you see, you know, Aaron Boone sitting in the dugout managing, and you know he used to run around the clubhouse when you were there, what kind of thoughts run through your head?
He used to imitate every batter's stance on the Philadelphia Phillies roster. When his father was, he would do his father first. And then he would run through even the pitchers, even bullpen pitchers, for crying out loud. He knew all of it. He was just absolutely delightful. He was charming and just one of the nicest young men. And you know what? That hasn't changed.
Tim McCarver will turn 78 on October 16th. His memory is still so sharp with, what, literally thousands of baseball games stored in that bank. And I have to share with you this personal story that still amazes me about the depth of that memory bank in McCarver's brain. In 1979, I was a 9-year-old baseball fan, a Phillies fan, living in Middletown, Pennsylvania, about 100 miles west of Philadelphia. One summer Saturday, McCarver and Tug McGraw came to the local mall for an autograph signing, and my dad took me and my older brother there to the Harrisburg East Mall. I remember being kind of scared, and it wasn't the usually gregarious McGraw who calmed my nerves. It was actually McCarver, who signed a 5x7 headshot and my Phillies yearbook, handing it back to me with a smile that I still remember. Well, fast forward to 1996. I was a producer at WFAN, and I was at the workout day at Yankee Stadium prior to the 1996 World Series, and I found myself standing on the field next to McCarver and Joe Buck. I had spoken to Tim on the phone many times for different shows I was working on, so I introduced myself, and he flashed that same warm smile I got from him when I was 9. I proceeded to tell him that he was the first autograph I ever got when I was a kid, and told him it was in the summer of 1979 at the Harrisburg East Mall. And Tim took a beat. He looked at me and said, "That was a Hess's department store, right?" I was floored then, and I was floored again when I recounted this whole story about him remembering this autograph signing 17 years after it happened. And he laughed and told me he still remembers it now, 40 years later. And yes, I still have the autograph picture and the yearbook from that day. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Tim McCarver, 60 years of baseball in him and still going strong. If you're new to 30 with Murdy or have missed any episodes this summer, please go check out our archive at radio.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Make sure to subscribe, leave a review. In the next couple weeks, we'll talk about the 50th anniversary of the 69 Miracle Mets with Ron Swoboda and the 40th anniversary of the We Are Family Pittsburgh Pirates with Kent DeCulvey. Until next time, thank you for listening. I'm Sweeney Murdy.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.